good morning and welcome to Backchat. I'm Hugh Chiverton, your co-host today is Rachel Cartland. Rachel, good morning to you.
Good morning.
We're talking first today about Disneyland and transitional housing. Housing Secretary Frank Chan has urged Disneyland to give up a site reserved for its future expansion in Hong Kong to unlock land for transitional homes. Property developer Wheelock has said it will use 500,000 square feet of its land to build 2,000 transitional housing units. Henderson Land Development and others are also lending parcels of land to the government with a similar aim. But what do you make of the Disney idea? Other promises on transitional housing? Is it a welcome short-term relief from queues for public housing? Or does it dodge the main issue? Is it fair for the government to put pressure on Disney like this? And then in the second part of the programme this morning, we're going to be joined by the Consul General of Iran in Hong Kong as well. Well, as a Middle East affairs expert to talk about U.S. and Iranian relations and developments in the region after the killing of the military chief Qasem Soleimani and now rocket attacks this morning reported on a U.S. base in Iraq. If you want to talk to him, if you want to comment on anything that you have heard or are likely to hear, you want to join the discussion, give us a call, 233-88266. Leave a message on our Facebook page, that's Backchat on RTHK Radio 3, or send us an email and our address is backchat@rthk.hk. We'd very much like to hear from you. A couple of emails first related to other issues. First of all, one from Thomas. Thomas, I didn't quite see the point. You've kind of lost me a little bit here, but let me read the message anyway. Thomas says, Hong Kong, with the subject line, Hong Kong and the Puppet Master. Yesterday, your listener made a very interesting remark about the debut of Mr. Law Huining. Even before taking his seat in Western, Mr. Law gave a press briefing in Putonghua. Carrie Lam, who was not present at the press briefing, said, quote, I will meet him later this week. Who will meet whom? Your listener made a pointed remark, the Puppet Master coming out of his hiding. It reminds me very much of the other colonial times of other puppet masters. A colonial secretary appointed by Whitehall came to Hong Kong. He was also speaking in a language foreign to a great number of Hong Kong people. Today, one colonial government was replaced by another. As the local government of Hong Kong is quasi-dysfunctional, the nice-sounding slogan, Hong Kong people ruling Hong Kong, must be discarded. What is left is rule by law. That comes from Thomas. And follow-up on our discussion yesterday about fires in Australia and about climate change. Mike, who did come on the programme, wants to correct the record. He says, I am not a, quote, global weather change denier, unquote. One of your keyboard warriors made this claim wrongly. I even stated that for the past 5,000 years, the planet has been getting warmer. Check the NASA homepage as to when it has stopped warming. For the past few years, as CO2 continues to rise, but average temperatures haven't. The problem with the left is that if you don't subscribe to their solution, they label you as a denier. Fact, the planet is getting hotter in some areas and cooler in other areas. The average is unchanged. That comes from Mike. Thank you very much indeed for that message. Joining us for our discussion now about Disney and transitional housing, in our central studio we have Tom Yam, who's a member of the Citizens Task Force for Land Supply, and David Webb is the editor of website.com and a shareholder activist. Rachel.
Yeah, thanks. Good morning. We're lucky to have such a distinguished guest over in the studio, able to brief us on both aspects, the economic and the environmental. So I guess we'd like to ask the same question to both people, a two-pronged question. Is this a good idea, transitional housing going into Disneyland? And then secondly, is it feasible? Has the government got the right leverage to be able to do this? David, perhaps we could start with you.
Right, morning, and Happy New Year. The full agreement between the government and the Disney Corporation was never published. I kept asking for it in 1999 and onwards, and it remains secret. So we haven't seen exactly the details, but we know the outline. And they have the company, which is Hong Kong International Theme Parks Limited, which is 53% owned by the Hong Kong government, has a 20-year initial option over the Phase 2 piece of land, which is about 60 hectares. And that was an agreement dated December 99, so it should have expired at the end of December last year. And then there's an automatic five-year extension, which would take us up to the end of 2024, and a second five-year extension, but only if attendance rates are between 8 and 10 million people, which they're far short of. They're still only at about 6 million people, probably less than that last year with the protests. So it looks like the option's going to expire in 5 years anyway. Otherwise, I'd be surprised if Disney would allow the government to basically waive that option. I assume that the shareholders' agreement has an undertaking that Disney would have a veto on changes to that option. Otherwise, the government, with its majority shareholding, could just call the shots and waive the option. So it would require Disney's cooperation, but maybe they would do it just for, you know, public sentiment reasons in order not to be seen as standing in the way. The second issue is whether it's even a good idea to embark on so-called transitional housing with all the various developers that have talked about lending bits of land to the government. Now, these companies are all listed on the stock exchange, and they have a duty to their shareholders to protect shareholder value. They can't simply give away assets without good reason, even though New World, in a press conference and not in a public announcement, indicated that they would be giving away 3 million square feet. And you know, you can only do something like that if you think it's going to generate a net benefit to the shareholders. So the question is, what do they get in return? And I think what they get is the installation of important infrastructure, roads, possibly even rail, water, electricity, drainage, sewerage. You have to have all of these things in place to have any kind of housing. And then it becomes pretty permanent. I mean, whether it's initially built in a rapid-fire way, the infrastructure is permanent. And so what they get is the facilitation of future development of their land after the loan expires. It's collusion, basically, what some people would call collusion, but it's an arrangement that furthers their own interests. That's why the share prices have generally gone up on these announcements rather than down at the thought of losing shareholder value. I think that we need to focus on permanent solutions. We need to focus on generating the land supply. And there is 60 hectares there that could probably house, if you took a 5x plot ratio, you generate about 32 million square feet of property there. 32,000 units of 1,000 square feet each, those would be quite big by Hong Kong standards, or 50,000 units of 600-odd square feet each. Each housing two people, so you've got 100,000 people just on that plot. And if you do the logical thing and shut down Disneyland, which has been loss-making since it started, then you actually got a much bigger piece of land. The whole site is about 280 hectares, including the public areas like the Inspiration Lake and so on that are not part of the official Disneyland. So 280 hectares, you could house about 250,000 people on there, which then you start to wonder, why do we need to do the so-called East Lantau metropolis right next to it, in the waters between Lantau and Hong Kong, if you've got that land ready made?
Very clear. Thank you very much indeed. Maybe now we could ask Ms. Yam. You've been very well known for devoting your life, really, to the good of Lantau. Yeah, the good of the environment of the islands. So what would you think about this proposal? Do you think it would be good for Lantau, bad for Lantau, something that should never happen? Or?
Well, good morning and happy new year to you all, too. Before I make my comment, let me sort of compliment what David just said. Essentially, David is saying all this deal could be a Trojan horse for the developer to gain a foothold in land they develop that they will use for other purposes later. So that's a very good point David made. It's kind of like a Trojan horse. Now, on this Disneyland, let's back up a little bit and look at the big picture. Instead of looking at the deal structure of Disneyland, at the end of the day, it's another piece of land that we want to build house in. And that's the question Hong Kong been struggling, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the issue. Now, curiously, up to about 1-2 years ago, government insists that no more land, just can't find them, can't touch them. Therefore, mm-hmm. we need to build Lantau Tomorrow Vision for $1 trillion. Strangely enough, over the past year, and in particular after the unrest the last seven mm-hmm. months, there are pressure on addressing the problem. One of the reasons they're given for the unrest is the young people couldn't find a house, right? Mm-hmm. Even the mainland government began to criticize the developer. that they should give up some of the land. Lo and behold, in the last 6 months, we have Wheelock, New World, Henderson, all become gracious corporate citizens to look after Hong Kong welfare, right? And now we got Disneyland on the table. So within 2 months, Wheelock offered to, 4.6 hectares, half a million square foot land. New World offer about 3 million square foot, it's about 32 hectares. Henderson offer about, again, 32 hectares, right? And Disneyland has 60 hectares. And lo and behold, recently, government released the Brownfield study, which they've been holding up for the last 2 years.
Mm.
And right away, the study show there are about 460 of high potential brownfield that can be developed. Okay, let me add up these numbers. Between the three companies that offer this land, the Disney World and Brownfield, I got 600 hectares of land on the table now in situ that can be developed now by some mechanism or another.
And that's not counting the PLA land.
Exactly.
Because, do they really need an airbase in Hong Kong to defend Hong Kong against China, which is what it was there for in the first place?
So David took the words right out of my mouth. It's right at my tongue now. I think before you know it, the PLA would offer to help.
Wow, that really would be a development, wouldn't it?
What would Wayne Hartson mind? Hang on. Tell me, does that mean that you would support this development at Disneyland?
Yes. Now, David is much more conversant on the intricacy of contractual process. But as a matter of principle, I support the idea that we should find land wherever they are and make the best use of it.
So you would support building on this site in Disneyland?
Yes, I do.
It's adjacent to Disneyland.
Yes. Let me point out one of the big selling points the government has on Lantau Tomorrow Vision is they'll build 180,000 public housing on that island, right? Just the land that I just list as is could build more than 200,000 public housing.
I think one limitation would be the height because as I understand it, we did invite Mike Rouse onto this program, who negotiated the deal. But my understanding is that you can't overlook Disneyland.
Well, certainly.
Well, we haven't seen the agreement, so we don't know what that says.
But when it comes to Disneyland, you support developing to building on this site.
I do. I even take one step further.
So, David Webb, do you support building on this site?
Yes, but I would do. I would auction the land for permanent usage. The standard 50 years, if not longer.
Yeah.
And also I'd move away
You can't because it belongs to you've got this agreement.
No, 60 hectares belongs to the government. It's under option to the company, the International Theme Parks Limited, but only for another 5 years. After that, it becomes purely government land again, with no options over it. There may be something in the joint venture agreement that has height limits. We don't know because we've never seen it. It should be a public document. We don't also know what the royalty agreements are with Disneyland, how much they take off the top, but it's highly lucrative to them.
Your plan would be to sell the land?
Yes, you would auction it for development in the usual way. And I would do it. I mean, Hong Kong needs to move away from micromanagement of its land supply. So I would auction it for any non-industrial purpose, and let's see what the bids turn out as. You fix the plot ratio up front. You decide how much development density you're allowing. But if they want to build hotels rather than housing, if they want to build shopping malls, they could choose to do that. All over Hong Kong, we've been trying to micromanage the supply. The government plays Farmville with a land supply. They say, well, this piece of land must be a data center and this piece must be a hotel and so on, rather than finding the optimal economic use. And the second thing is, on housing generally, the government needs to break out of its fixed paradigm of public versus private, because it's all just housing. What public housing is housing with welfare built into it. Mm-hmm. And those two things need to be separated so that we provide the rental support to those who need it, but we don't classify residential property in that way. You could give everybody today who is in a public housing unit a voucher that covers the full market value of the rent that their property is really worth, rather than the 10% of their income that they're currently paying. So they could stay there, or they could take that voucher and shop around and move closer to their place of work. And it would be a per capita voucher, which means that when your household shrinks and your kids leave home and apply for their own public benefits, then your support
David,
drops.
David, I know you think that the market solves all things, but it doesn't. And when it comes to issues like...
It's a very good solution to this problem.
There is such a thing as town planning, and there is such as a need for town planning. I'm sure Tom Yum will acknowledge.
Only in the broadest terms.
If you sell an area piece by piece...
Look, I reckon...
to the market, you're not going to get...
I reckon...
You're not going to get vital services. You're not going to get a balance. You're just going to get endless malls or...
No, you wouldn't, because I actually think opposite Disney, you would probably not get another theme park, for example. You'd probably get housing. That would be the most likely outcome. But if you just let the market decide on each piece of land generally, you will get a better result.
But haven't we seen over recent years, actually, this plunging into hotels? All sorts of useful sites have been used for hotels, and we've suddenly woken up and just...
Yeah, the government... But that's because the government is centrally planning the land supply, Rachel. So this is my point, that rather than let the market decide whether housing would be a better use than a hotel for a piece of land, the government says, oh no, that must be a hotel because we need to support the tourism industry because we're centrally planning.
You call it central planning. It's just planning. It's something that everybody in the world has to do. The less
you do of it, the better the economic outcome.
If you just leave
it
up to the market, you don't get a desirable, you don't get a functioning city.
Well, let's adopt socialist, central planning like China tried from 1949 to 1979. We'll allocate quotas of production to each factory and tell them what to make. We'll allocate crops to farmers.
Can I make a point about
why bother to go through the step of transitional housing?
Yes.
Why just straight go to resuming the land? Because you do you've got another negotiation at the end of 7 years. So we're back to the same problem in 7-8 years when the lease ran out.
I mean, that's a really good point, isn't it? I mean, this whole issue of why are we building transitional housing at all?
Yeah, but why are we building budget hotels as well? Why are we saying this piece of land must be hotels at Kai Tak, for example, when there might be more demand for housing?
I think we're now onto a different subject, which is this reversion to the whole concept of transitional housing. I mean, we thought that was totally a thing of the past.
Well, what are they thinking of? Tents? I mean, you know, assuming you're building typhoon-proof housing.
The old transitional housing basically used to look like prefabs in a way.
Right. Yeah.
Very low kind of huts.
Hang on, that was temporary housing. Isn't there a difference between temporary housing and transitional? Transitional housing can be permanent structures. But just use where you don't stay that long in.
I call that the refugee concept. Right?
Yeah.
You know, refugee in the Syria-Iraq border, or the boat people in Hong Kong, you build a shelter for them quickly. But that's different than like more or less permanent hot wire housing. So let's call it refugee housing, not transitional housing.
Absolutely. I must say I was amazed when I heard this concept creeping back into our policy because, you know, that was looked on as in the old days as a sort of emergency thing that we had to do, not something that should be part of the policy forever. But anyway, are we now seeing the end of Lantau tomorrow, do both of you think? Is this the end of the great big island off East Lantau?
Well, not as long as we have the current political structure, because they like it.
I compare Lantau tomorrow to a fantasy. The government selling a fantasy on shaking ground. Like, if you want to build a house, you look at a piece of land, it's a sound foundation before you even consider building a house. Lantau tomorrow is a fantasy. Every claim that the government made cannot be realized. They claim it would provide, first of all, you would not find any city in the world they have 180,000 public housing surrounding a CBD. It ain't going to happen, number one. Number two, they claim that you have affordable housing in Lantau tomorrow. But based on the cost estimate, the sales of land that the Secretary of Development, Michael Wong, that private housing, a 800-square-foot house in Lantau tomorrow would cost $15 million. So if people cannot afford a flat in Hong Kong now, they're not going to be able to afford a flat in Lantau tomorrow.
I'll disagree. Yeah. I mean, it is feasible. It's the path of least resistance under the current political structure. You've got the Hunyuk dominating the land allocation system in the new territories with their small house issues. You've got the PLA unwilling to release land. You've got developers with their farmland reserves, and in the water, you've got government-owned seabed, which you can convert into land. It is feasible. It won't actually cost net $1 trillion because, of course, the government will, once it starts the phased reclamation, start auctioning the land, and the money will flow back into reserves. So it's financially feasible as well.
Is it politically feasible anymore?
The
protests, and I must say, right. It may not have been explicit, but I felt, wow, this is the end of Lantau tomorrow.
No, I think the protests are more about accountability for policymaking. And sure,
now they'll be so scared of putting
if you look at the way the Lantau tomorrow is being pushed, it's very similar to how the extradition bill being pushed.
Yeah.
It went through LegCo quickly because the government has majority in it. They never tried to defend it in LegCo. In fact, when Leung Jianying proposed in 2014, it was approved by the development panel within 2 months. Within 2 months, right? So they are pushing it the same way they pushed the extradition bill.
They're still pushing it.
They will.
Carrie Lam still said something like, so we're still going to go ahead with it.
I think people would begin to see the connection between the extradition bill
The issue is all about the political structure. That drives the policy set on education, housing, healthcare, whatever it is we've got. It's because of the current tycoon-dominated election committee of the chief executive and in the functional constituencies in LegCo. If we abolish the corporate voting system, which can be done within local law, and introduce one worker, one vote, as we do have already in education, accounting, law, and so on, then you would have a democratically elected chief executive who would not act in the interests of the property developers and the Hung Yu Kuk. He or she would act in the interests of the public.
Look at it in a different way. I mean, providing more, I mean, whatever kind of priority you give it, and obviously Tung Chee Hwa thinks it's kind of top priority, housing and the high prices and high rents, you know, have been a contributory factor to unhappiness in Hong Kong and discontent in Hong Kong. And it's and doing things like this, appearing to get tough on Disney or the golf club, and with developers chipping in and making this what looks like a donation and so on. Those are crowd pleasing measures, aren't they? Those are going
to
get
not once they're revealed to be Trojan horses. It's in their self interest. The share prices have gone up, not down here.
But it's not a Trojan horse because it's not a city under siege.
Well,
you're supposed to have a fruitful cooperative relationship between private and public sector.
That would be sweet, wouldn't it?
You have traffic either way. If you're always going to think in terms of somebody getting an advantage, oh my God, he's going to get a road built near this development. Roads are used by everyone. What? Roads are a public benefit. It's good that if these developers have large areas of land, if we're going to say, why doesn't the government exercise its powers to that development. We're always going to have a shortage of land.
Thank you for your opinion.
Are we going to sit there and say, at least we never gave anyone an advantage? We're going to be in the situation.
Thank you for your rhetorical opinion, Hugh. One
of the problems is the government presenting land of tomorrow is a penicillin that solves all Hong Kong problems.
Wouldn't it be better if the government exercised its compulsory purchase powers to take this land rather than rent it for 5 years or 7 years?
To pay for it
at land resumption values.
But the developers, then buy the land? Well, then they're in the same situation that they were in.
it becomes government land and they can auction it for the usual purposes on the usual terms.
Let's ask Tom Yam if he thinks that Lantau tomorrow is now dead and it is a matter of looking for other options.
In 60 seconds.
I think it is slowly twisting in the wind. Okay, and depending how the wind blow, either it can get back on the tree, if they drop on the ground.
It's kind of like national anthem bill, isn't it?
Right, right. Yeah. No one is pushing it, the government. Nobody is pushing it. It's not even on the financial committee's agenda. Now, I think the Hong Kong people are seeing through it that it's a white elephant, that what the government promised cannot deliver. Let me give an example. Michael Wong said LTV would bring in $140 billion economic benefit to Hong Kong. Now, with 700,000 people that come to...
Well, David Webb says it's financially feasible.
Wait. Let me talk about the business opportunity. That means 200,000 per capita in GDP of 200,000 in Lantau tomorrow. Hong Kong now, the per capita GDP $350,000, which means Lantau tomorrow will perform worse than Hong Kong now. So all the claim that government's making, they did not realize the consequence of what they're claiming.
Okay. We're going to have to break we've got to break for the news at 9 o'clock. We will return to the issue. We're also going to be talking about Iran and the US with the consul general, the Iranian consul general in Hong Kong. If you want to talk to him, you want to comment on that or anything else, give us a call, 233-88266. The weather, mainly fine, 22 degrees at the moment. Humidity's now at 79%. Welcome back. Back Track this Wednesday morning with Rachel Cartland and me, Hugh Chiverton. We're continuing our discussion now about the issue of housing, transitional housing, with the government proposal or request to Disney to utilise a site next to the theme park, which is on which it has an option for development. We're joined in our central studio by Tom Yam, who's a member of the Citizens Task Force for Land Supply, and shareholder activist David Webb. Now, in about 10 minutes time, we're going to be joined, we hope, by the Consul General, the Acting Consul General of Iran in Hong Kong, as well as an Australian academic, to talk about developments in Iran and US. We've just been hearing there in the news about rocket attacks on a US airbase in Iraq. If you've got any questions for him or comments to make on the subject, or if you want to say anything about Disney or transitional housing, then please share your thoughts by calling us on 233-88266, by emailing us, backchat@rthk.hk is our address, or by leaving a message on our Facebook page. That's Backchat on RTHK Radio 3, where everyone can see it. In an email, let's see, this is an email from Joe Average, who says, this is presumably to do with the housing, this is probably a Trojan horse to bring Chinese people into Hong Kong. A few years ago, CY Leung said the average household income was HK$15,000 a month, and a regular property would be around 3 million. But from what I understand, we have 15,000 business visas given to Chinese professionals, and all the property is being held at 5 million plus, and luxury apartments, and this is why we have so many empty property in the new territory. And of course, Hong Kong people are angry when they have to wait 7 years. But a Chinese person who comes over the border only has to wait for 1 year and they can have a room. What the hell is going on? As far as I understand, Disney was being financed by the government because it was a white elephant. Therefore, this is using taxpayers' money. Property is a white elephant. A Hong Kong government should be building desalination plants to make fresh water for Hong Kong so we're not held to ransom by China. That comes from Joe Average. Let's go back to Disney. I was just kind of interested, David Webb, is this because this is a public appeal? I mean, they're business partners. Hmm. Is this kind of an unusual thing to do?
Negotiating tactic.
I mean, public like this rather than to have a word with them and saying, could we possibly use the land? They've made this big public statement saying we appeal to your social conscience.
They're obviously trying to put a bit of public pressure on Disney. But if you go roll back the clock, this project was formally announced in the Donald Chung's famous 1999 budget speech, the same speech in which he announced the Cyberport project. And you know how that turned out.
Yeah.
That, of course, you know, one speech, two white elephants. They announced it before they'd finished the negotiations with Disney, putting themselves under pressure to to end up with a very unequal treaty. In fact, Disney is the only site that's been granted a 100-year lease, 50 years plus 50 years in their lease, because they said, well, we can't possibly manage with only 50 years like all the other sites in Hong Kong. And Tung Chee Hwa also, in his administration, extended the U.S. consulate lease to 999 years, which I recently reported. So yes, they're putting a bit of pressure on Disney. And Disney may say, well, look, realistically, this thing's a failure. We're not going to reach the threshold, and we won't want to exercise that option if we have to pay for all the expansion. And if the government and the finance committee of LegCo won't pay for its share, 53% share of the expansion into a new phase, so they may be willing to let that drop. The option mm-hmm. expires in 5 years anyway, so they'll have to decide within that time frame whether to do it and how to finance it. The LegCo did approve, of course, it's government controlled LegCo, in 2017, a $5.5 billion injection, and so far I think they've put about $30 billion, not counting the opportunity cost of the land, into the Disney project from the Hong Kong coffers. There has to come an end point. And I'm horrified to see this morning Ocean Park in the newspapers, sources saying that they're going to be asking for a $10 billion allocation from the government because they're hemorrhaging money again. Maybe it's time to rethink the allocation of land at Ocean Park as well. Do we really need these theme parks to be a viable economy? Mm. How much do they really add, or do they just displace other economic activity?
Mm. Yeah, it's
luxury villas, you mean? When you talk about other... You mean luxury villas on the south side?
I don't know what the market would put there.
I do. Luxury villas.
Yeah. It's quite likely, but would the market discover that?
But I mean, this is digression, but I think there is a question about Ocean Park, because it was originally intended 40-odd years ago as an oceanarium for the people of Hong Kong, and it has grown like Topsy into a
It's always been a bit
park.
Confused, though, because, giant pandas live up in the forests of Sichuan, not by the ocean, and they've got pandas there, so it's, kind of a mix of things. But I mean, it's a fun place to go. Land value, as Hugh points out, it's quite likely that it would adopt its surroundings. If you auctioned it, you'd end up with luxury housing and apartments mm-hmm. along that strip, but the land values that it would generate could be used to build hospitals and schools and all the other good things,
aquaria.
Or cut tax rates and stimulate the economy. That's all sorts of outcomes.
All right, some emails. So this is from Thomas, who says, transitional housing and resettlement estates. How terrible to hear about the plan, the transitional housing. Mm. Sheikh Kit Mei resettlement estate was built in the 1950s. 20 years later, in the 1970s, this estate was redeveloped. This estate was built as an emergency measure. Mm. How can it be that Hong Kong, by statistics one of the wealthiest cities in the world, has to build such transitional housing? Mm. The influx of 150 mainlanders per day cannot be the reason. Mm. When we watch the speed of construction in China, why not build permanent housing? Mm. Tung Chee Hwa recently said, we failed. Is it not that rather he should say, I failed? It looks like... And it looks like that three other chief executives have also failed. It's high time that Hong Kong gets a government from the people, for the people. That comes from Thomas. Drake says, one guest said that Lantau tomorrow is technically feasible because money would flow back. I think he means economically feasible, because money would flow back to the reserves once the government started to auction off reclaimed land. But as the other guests have pointed out, the end users could not afford to buy the flats from the developers. It might be feasible from the perspective of government financing, but not feasible from the end users.
That's not true. Clearly, people can afford the prices that they're paying in Hong Kong right now for apartments. It's partly because interest rates are so low. That's one of the major factors.
But the other person who commented earlier was making a point that these are mainly mainlanders coming in, wealthy mainlanders investing here. Do you not think
that's
that
not
that's
true
the
either.
Case? No. It's not true.
Even before the so-called buyer's stamp duty, which is actually foreigner stamp duty or even mainlander stamp duty, was introduced by CY Leung, even before that, the mainlanders were only... buying a small portion of the property stock in Hong Kong, mostly newer apartments, first-time buy, first sale apartments. But because of those punitive taxes, they're down to a trickle. You have to pay 30% stamp duty if you don't have permanent residency in Hong Kong. It actually deters people, professionals, moving to Hong Kong because they're not allowed to buy property for the first 7 years that they live here. The idea that mainlanders are driving up prices is just wrong.
I question. David claimed that people can afford the flat, like pricing at $50 million in Lantau tomorrow. I have many, many...
I didn't say they would be $50 million. You did.
$15 million. I have many, many lecture discussion and room full of auditorium people. I asked the question, please raise your hand. You can afford to buy a $15 million flat in Hong Kong. Mm. Not a single hand was raised. Think about what it picked up, the down payment for $50 million flat.
Well, there's, I don't know how you get 15.
If the young people cannot buy a $6 million flat now, forget about a $50 million flat.
Two points.
I seem to remember that Carrie Lam said that she could just afford $13 million for her retirement in the new territories.
In most economies, young graduates can't immediately afford to buy a property. You save up. I couldn't afford to buy a property immediately.
But the calculation now, it takes a graduate 20 years of saving just to pay the down payment of flat.
It's much quicker in other places,
20 years at their initial salary, but their salaries grow as they get more experience and they get promoted and so on.
But I think that will depend partly which profession they're in.
The fact is, we do not have, thousands of, or tens of thousands of unsold units. There isn't massive vacancy in Hong Kong. The Ratings Evaluations Department measures vacancies, and they are at lows.
Actually, it's 4.7%, David, for private housing.
Yeah, including 4%. People, including flats under renovation and so on. So flats in between tenancies.
But we've also got a lot of people living in highly unsatisfactory conditions, haven't we? There was one thing that C.Y. Leung said, that the squatter problem has in effect become now a subdivided flat problem.
That is probably true for about 100,000 people. Obviously 50,000 of those, if they were relocated, if they're sharing two households in one flat, that would relieve the problem significantly. It is a problem, but it's not on the scale that some people would have you believe.
Tom, yeah?
Well, let me tell you the theory. In Hong Kong now, average experience employee with university degree, with college degree, is only $36,000 a month.
Yep.
Now, a new graduate, salary around $18,000.
Yep.
Tell me, if you are even an experienced college graduate, you're earning only $36,000 a year. Tell me, how are you going to make the down payment of a $15 million flat? It's not possible. So this land out tomorrow.
Well, the down payment, if you take the mortgage insurance, is 10%.
Well, that would
not
increase
30%. So you need to put down $1.5 million if you want such a big flat. Starter homes are not at $15 million at the moment; they're more like $6 million. The market is functioning. Certainly, if you flooded the market with more land supply to allow larger homes, then the price per square foot would certainly drop. And that will be a different set of policies that might come out of a democratically elected government, but probably won't emerge now.
That's not the case historically. In the past, no matter how much
historically, we've never had a democratically elected government. But that's a different issue now.
Yeah.
These issues need to be addressed at the root cause, which is the political structure.
I agree. I mean, the evil and all the issue in Hong Kong reduces to the government can manipulate LegCo to a supermajority. So they give Carrie Lam and the rest the perception that whatever they want, they get. And that's one reason that created this extradition bill crisis. Is the same reason that lead to the Land of Tomorrow vision. Unless we fix the political structure, this problem will perpetuate.
Yeah, one thing I haven't seen.
We're quite away from Disney now, so let's wind it up because we wanted to move on as well. Just some emails. Thank you very much indeed. Andrew says, with the way things are going with climate change, building an artificial island in the middle of the sea seems another genius idea by Carrie and the team. Lantau today needs to be rebranded as Atlantis tomorrow. Jay says, has anyone done a survey on how many Hong Kong people actually go to Disneyland? Most families families can only go by themselves, or probably once every 5 years. Mm. They can't take the children of other families to enjoy it because it's too expensive.
That's true.
Only for the wealthy and sucking the tourists. That comes from David. And Guy says, on Lantau tomorrow, is this not another plot to use our hard taxpayer-earned reserves to line the depleted coffers of mainland construction companies on yet another mega white elephant shoe-shining project? As David and Tom have said, our hapless so-called government is too scared to take on vested interest to develop existing land, PLA land, brownfield sites and developer land reserves. And where's the sand coming from? Those questions from Guy. Thank you very much indeed to our guests this morning in our central studio, Tom Yam, a member of the Citizens Task Force for Land Supply, and shareholder activist David Webb. Thank you very much for joining us today. Bring the time now to 17 minutes past nine.